Welcome back to your morning conversation here on KXCV Karen W. I'm Jeremy Werner. Joining me this morning is one of the two people behind the new counseling service here in Maryville, known as Hallelujah Counseling, opened just last month here in Maryville. His name is Haston Wilson. Haston, I want to thank you for joining me this morning. And so you've brought new counseling services to the city of Maryville, but when I say new, I kind of mean it not only as a business, but also as bringing something that, you know, I've never heard of, and I would assume most people haven't. What is EMDR?
EMDR stands for Eye Movement Desensitization and Reprocessing. So it was developed in the 1980s by a lady named Francine Shapiro. And Francine, I think she worked in neuroscience, and she was having a bad day and discovered that by going outside, and this is how the legend goes anyway, she went outside, she was sitting on a bench watching some squirrels run back and forth, and as her eyes moved back and forth, she noticed that she started to feel a little bit better, and she was like, huh, that's weird, I wonder why that is. And so she went back to her office, and she did just like a real brief test with some of her colleagues, where she had them hold a distressing memory in mind, and then she just moved her hand back and forth to follow the eye movements, or maybe she just did some kind of left-right bilateral stimulation, and they were like, oh, yeah, that's kind of weird, like, I feel better too. So she thought, maybe there's something to this. Maybe if you incorporate some kind of left-right bilateral stimulation into therapy, maybe that helps in some way. And then it's just kind of, over the last 40-50 years, it's just started to kind of unravel from there. So EMDR is, well, let me just explain a little bit about what led me to EMDR therapy. So in my clinical work here at the university, I was noticing that people were having symptoms that it was really hard for me to treat, but I couldn't figure out exactly why or what I was missing, but I knew that something was missing. It was really frustrating for me because, you know, you just want to help people. And I'll give you an example. So I had a student, and by all accounts, you would think, you know, very healthy individual. She had a very supportive family. She was a leader here on campus. She was doing everything great, took, you know, her counseling and therapy work very seriously, like accomplished her goals. She came in originally because of pretty severe anxiety and panic attacks. So that was the symptom that we started trying to address in treatment. And it got a little bit better over time, just through, you know, learning how to do deep breathing to regulate the anxiety and incorporating frequent exercise, having meaningful social connections, you know, not bottling things up and talking about it. And we worked in treatment for about a year, and it was getting better, but she would still randomly have these panic attacks once in a while, and they were just like out of the blue. Like, she would just be sitting there. She was I think she was a member of one of the campus ministries and on campus, and so they'd be having their weekly meetings, and she'd just be like sitting there with her friends, and all of a sudden, boom, panic attack. It's like, what the heck, you know, she's amongst friends, it's logically a very safe environment, what the heck is triggering this, what's going on? And I didn't know, so I felt like there was a gap in my treatment, and it was like, what the heck am I missing here? And so what I realized is that EMDR is the missing piece, because most clinical interventions, cognitive behavioral therapy, that kind of thing, was the standard of practice. So basically, cognitive behavioral therapy is, if you challenge the thinking involved, it will change the behavior. That's the output from it. So change the thinking, which changes the feeling, which changes the behavior, essentially. So if I'm having anxiety, it might be I'm what they call catastrophizing. So it's like, oh man, I'm gonna fail this test, and I'm gonna fail out of college, and then my parents aren't gonna love me anymore, and I'm gonna wind up homeless on the street in a box, right? You know, just taking it and running with it. It's out of control, basically. So if we can challenge that and say, okay, well, if we fail this test, what's actually going to happen? Well, there'll be another test. You know, I can work hard and I can get my grade back up. or whatever. And so then that would change the feeling about it, take some pressure off, and then the anxiety would start to dissipate. So goes the logic. And that's, you know, a piece of the pie, I think. I think that that's important to address things from a thought-based, logical perspective. But again, if you've done that, and you've gone all the way down that road, and you've reached the end of the train tracks, but the symptoms are still persisting, what then? What do you do? Do you just say, well, it's better, bye, you know, I was not happy with that. And so what I realized was, outside of the logical mind, the front brain, there's this whole other world of emotional learning that takes place that's pretty much by definition not logical. There's no logic that's involved in it, and EMDR targets emotional learning. And that's what we're trying to address. And so we're trying to help what lives there resolve, essentially. So to get, I guess, into it just a little bit. So whenever we are doing EMDR, we're targeting the deep brain, essentially. And that's where emotional learning happens. So we're trying to basically resolve any kind of things that are held on to there.
Okay. And not to say that, you know, all fields aren't, you know, settled and aren't evolving, but it sounds like when you said 1980s, it sounds like EMDR is still kind of this fresh new thing being looked at. Would that be a correct assessment?
I think that with the advance of technology, EMDR has had enough clinical studies now to be able to say pretty certainly that it's an effective modality. I don't have any reservation about saying that. However, the, you know, what people always want is, tell me exactly why this works. Well, with something that's thought-based and logic-driven, that's pretty easy to do, you know, like with the example that I just gave. With EMDR, it's pretty complicated because we're talking about a complex interweave of many different parts of the brain that are activated during the therapy, and that helps the information resolve. So it's a little bit different, and it's just more muddy whenever you try to explain the exact mechanisms for why it works the way that it does. But it is still based in neuroscience, and what I like about it, and what I've seen over and over again using this therapy, is your symptoms don't just like get better and then happen sometimes. If we take the treatment all the way through, most of the time they resolve completely and then they don't come back anymore after that. So it's, I mean, it's become a foundational part of my practice. It seems too good to be true, honestly, but I've seen it work enough times that I feel really confident with it.
So what would a normal EMDR session be like?
So with EMDR, it's a little bit different than your standard talk therapy. So I always kind of joke with people that neither of us really have to work too hard. We're just going to kind of let your brain do its thing, and we're both going to kind of just sit back and observe what happens. Because what's going on is basically your brain does the process of EMDR very naturally anyways, but we're going to kind of work on this in a guided way. Okay, so what somebody might expect, there's 8 phases of EMDR. So, which sounds like a lot, but it's really not that much. Phase 1 is basically just like, okay, so let's meet, let's identify what the symptoms are. So I'm having panic attacks. Okay, cool. So I might have somebody in phase 1 recall a recent example of a time where they felt really anxious, you know, maybe something that happened in the last week or two. And then from there, see, we're not going by logic, we're going by feeling. So I'll say, okay, so hold that experience in mind. All right, when you felt anxious here a week or two ago, has there been anything else that comes to mind that felt like that? And they'll probably have some other kind of memory that comes up. It's like, oh yeah, I had this other time where I felt pretty anxious. And then we work backwards in time, kind of using that and a few other techniques, because sometimes nothing comes to mind immediately. So we have several different techniques we can use. Some are focused on, you know, body sensation, right? So I felt really anxious 2 weeks ago. Okay, where'd you feel that? Like, okay, I felt it like right in my chest. That's where I normally feel my anxiety. Okay, I want you to focus on that feeling you know, has there been another time where you felt like this? And then we go back and we kind of basically come up with our list of memories that we would like to reprocess at some point. Now, we may not ever need to resolve all of these, because what we're looking for is our first target memory. So what we're trying to come up with, the point of phase one of EMDR, is let's try to figure out which memory here may be foundational to our emotional learning. And usually that happens with the first memory chronologically that occurred, or the worst one, and sometimes it's both. So we talk about that and we try to figure it out. And the reason that our early, I don't want to sound like, oh, every single problem in life is all because of your messed up childhood, right? Like, that's not necessarily the situation, but it's just true that whenever we're five, you process information a lot differently than you do whenever you're 25, right? Or 45, and so on and so forth. So things that happen early can overwhelm our senses quite a bit more easily than it can whenever we're older and we just have a better understanding of the way the world works. We can explain other people's behaviors more easily, you know, those kinds of things that you're not able to do appropriately so whenever you're five. So that's phase one. Phase two is all about regulation. So sometimes when we bring up distressing stuff, that's really tough to do, right? So basically it's just, how can we kind of stay in a zone where we are like aware of our memories, we're not doing that thing where we shut them down and shove them in a box that we're working on reprocessing, and also we're not getting kind of too high where it's like, okay, I am totally, like, I'm dissociating right now, or I'm feeling really out of it, or I'm just getting so emotional to the point that I can't focus anymore. So there's an ideal window that you're trying to stay in where you know how you felt when the memory happened, but you're not like lost in it, kind of. So you try to stay in that zone. And then phases 3 through 7 are the actual reprocessing. So that's usually what most people are thinking of when they think of EMDR therapy. So what happens is people use some kind of bilateral stimulation, so some kind of left-right stimulation, and they follow that. So either just simple tapping, like left-right tapping. I have a light bar, which is really handy, because when I first started off, I was doing eye movements just by hand. And after you've done, you know, 750, 850, 1,000, like left-right motions, holding your elbow up in the air with people following your fingers, your shoulder gets pretty tired. So I was very thankful for a light bar that I just click a button and then a light goes back and forth left to right. And for some reason, that seems to activate certain parts of the brain that are responsible for this emotional learning. So some deep brain parts. And so whenever that left-right stimulation is happening, if you had a brain scan hooked up while you were doing EMDR therapy, it would pop up, oh, that's like on now. And then we just kind of go through the memory. We do a set of eye movements, 20 to 30, left, right, back and forth. And then I'll just say, okay, what are you experiencing now? And then people will tell me. And the memory just kind of moves like that all the way through. And it reprocesses adaptively, because your brain does this automatically anyway. It's just whenever an emotional, like an overly emotional memory happens, that process doesn't work completely correctly. So for example, all day long we walk around and we're taking in information through our senses, right? Like what we see, what we hear, what we taste, what we touch, all that. And you forget almost all of it, because you don't need to know the license plate number on every car that you drove by, or the shirt that everybody was wearing that you passed by on the sidewalk. It's not relevant information. And so your brain automatically filters that and discards what's not adaptive and necessary. But our brain has this amazing ability to attend to something relevant in our environment and figure that out, like, really quickly, like what's relevant. So you might be driving down the street here in good old Maryville, Missouri, and you're driving by the bank, let's say, a route that, you know, you've made many times before. and you're not paying any special attention to anything. You're not noticing the license plate numbers on everybody's cars, to use that example. But let's say you see four people wearing ski masks running out of the bank with bags over their shoulder, and they hop in a windowless van. Your brain's probably going to attend to that license plate number as those people peel out, right? So that way you can notify the authorities, hey, I think the bank's just been robbed, right? And I got the license plate number. But ordinarily, if you just saw a van parked outside of the bank, you wouldn't notice that in particular, even though it's within your visual plane, so in some way your brain took in that information. Well, you don't need that most of the time. When something that overwhelms our emotions takes place, that natural filtration does not happen, because it's adaptive for us to just remember, oh yeah, like I didn't like the way that felt, like that was really painful, or that made me feel embarrassed, or whatever the emotion happens to be. I don't like that. There's certain parts of our brain that are just there to protect us. So instead of filtering it, it's like, well, instead of filtering it like we normally do, I don't know what's relevant here and what's not. Let's just draw a real wide circle around all the information that was present whenever this happened. So that way, if anything even feels remotely like this in the future, we're just not even going to touch it. Like, we're just going to avoid. Which, back to my like case study here, I believe is responsible for why that person was having panic attacks, is because there was, even if it was subconscious, there's something in the environment, whatever it is, that's like vaguely similar to a time where they felt emotionally overwhelmed at some point in their life, even if it's when it is really early, and it may not even be correct, but that is feeling similar, and so it's spurring this whole fight, flight, freeze response, even though it's basically being tricked, right? Like it's not correct in this situation. Now, you can imagine how this might work, right, or be helpful. So like, let's say you and I are like hiking through the woods in Colorado together or something like that, and all of a sudden we stumble upon a bear's cave and we get chased by a bear, right? If we survive, we get out of there. Okay, that's good. Now, in the future, a few years later, we decide, you know what, let's go hiking again. And we may not even want to go hiking, right? But like, let's say we go hiking again and we're in the mountains and we see something that looks kind of like it might be a bear cave, like off in the distance. We're just going to be like, nope, 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 nope. Like, we're just going to go the other way, right? And I think that that's really helpful and adaptive. So I get why, like, that happens. But yeah, it's just really unhelpful sometimes when it's like not relevant and you get tricked. So anyway, the EMDR process, phases 3 through 7, are designed to help your brain come to that adaptive resolution of that information, and keep what's relevant and go ahead and discard what's not relevant. So something that might be relevant is like, that person is unsafe, but something bad happened to me while I was in Kansas City, Missouri. It's not that all of Kansas City, Missouri is unsafe. I don't need to feel like I'm on high alert or hypervigilant, for example, whenever I'm in just in the city limits of Kansas City. I probably should feel that way if I'm around that person that did that thing or whatever. So that's kind of how it works. That's what it's designed to do, and it works. It works really well. It's really helpful.
So I guess that kind of leads into the next question. When I looked into EDMR and I was like, okay, so what is EDMR? Because when I was told about this, I didn't know what it was. And I didn't want to do too much research so that I could kind of come into this interview, with some knowledge and have, instant question reactions. Not to have people peek behind the curtain, but that's how I processed and did this interview.
Sure.
But the main thing that kind of came up was how this works with PTSD, and that's what it kind of sounds like. Mm-hmm. Is that the main focus of this, or does it help with other neurological, emotional issues?
Yeah, so when I started this, I kind of thought, oh, I'm just getting trained for PTSD, but I very quickly realized, oh, I should probably expand my definition of trauma, right? So I remember, I do a lot of intakes, and there's a section about trauma in the intake, and many people have told me, oh, I don't have I haven't had that. I don't have any like trauma history, basically. But as we get to talking, it's like, oh, well, but there was a time that you felt emotionally overwhelmed. And so that's what I've come to realize trauma actually is. It's not based on reality, in logic, I should say, not reality. So, I mean, everybody is familiar with the, you know, tornadoes and train wrecks and combat stories and those kinds of things, things that are obvious trauma, right? But then there's other things that have happened that stick with us in a significant way that our brain doesn't reprocess correctly, like the time that we got bullied whenever we were in school, or the time that our teacher made us feel like we were less than. So I've dealt with things all across the spectrum of severity, but it doesn't really matter, is what I've found. It doesn't really matter the actual logical degree of the severity of the trauma as far as if EMDR will be helpful or not. Really, so that's why I say it's better to just think about it in terms of, were you emotionally overwhelmed during that time? Because then that activates the parts of the brain that are involved in this emotional learning. And if they were activated and they were in the driver's seat at the time, then there's a good chance that that memory is not going to be processed adaptively. So yeah, PTSD, you know, all those traumas that happen, the tornadoes and train wrecks and those kinds of things, obviously, yes, like EMDR is probably the best therapeutic modality for those things. But I've also just found that it pretty much carries over to a lot of issues across the spectrum. And I don't know, it's something that I think everybody would benefit from at some point in their life.
Well, I was going to ask, I was like, does irrational fears kind of come into that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, irrational fears definitely can be, because if they're irrational, they came from somewhere, right? And I mean, I think that, like I said, there's thought-based work to do with every kind of issue, right? Then there's also psychological work to do and the emotional learning side of it as well. So it's kind of two sides of the same coin.
Okay. That just kind of clicked in my head, because I don't want to list mine because I don't need my coworker Matt harassing me with it. But I was thinking of my buddy in high school, Amir, who had a just huge fear of snakes to the point where if it was in a movie, he just literally could not watch the screen. And so now I'm thinking, okay, maybe he could need some EMDR and get over it.
He is not Samuel L. Jackson, snakes on a plane. No. Yeah.
Well, I thought of it's Indiana Jones.
Yeah, why does it always have to be snakes?
Yeah. But no, it's fascinating. I guess the other component to that I was thinking of with, you know, not necessarily PTSD, but, and I guess in some ways irrational fears, but, you know, I guess how would it impact, you know, would it possibly help someone with like depression or, you know, maybe another kind of emotion that they're dealing with, even though it may not be connected with trauma?
Yeah, it definitely can, and it depends on various things. So I try to be pretty holistic in my treatment, so I definitely try to approach things from lots of angles and make sure that we're well, right? Just overall wellness is going to help significantly. But when I'm thinking about an issue like depression, for example, I think it's fair to ask, okay, so from a biological perspective, what's going on here? Like, are there genetics that we inherited from our parents that we could not help and have no control over that are either causing this or making us more susceptible to these symptoms? And that's a fair question to ask, right? And what can we do about that if we are? And how severe is it, right? And that's one angle that I need to take therapeutically from a psychological standpoint as well. Okay, so what might be factoring in here that's happened across the developmental lifespan that we need to address? Are there issues that have led to, are there memories, are there examples where we've been emotionally overwhelmed that have made us feel like we are not good enough, or that we cannot succeed, or whatever the kind of tape that plays in our head is that can result from this emotional overwhelm that occurs. And then with what I do personally, in my faith, I also incorporate a spiritual like aspect of that as well, and basically just come from also a biblical perspective, just sharing, you know, these are, you know, perhaps things to consider on that, from that angle as well. So I kind of try to just provide a holistic care for people and talk about it from different angles. I think it's pretty limited if you just come at it from one of those perspectives.
Okay. Not to say I don't want you to have customers, but I didn't want people inundating your office with, hey, I have, you know, I heard about EMDR, I have schizophrenia, or, you know, I have a broken leg, or, you know, just bringing issues that, you know, because it sounds like it can help, but it's not a, you know, solution for certain things.
Yeah, and it's a therapeutic modality like anything else. I think it's a great tool in the toolkit, but you would be limiting yourself if it was the only card that you could ever play. And I think it's important to know with it that oftentimes it's not where I start with folks, just because I want to make sure that we are able to have some degree of being able to regulate ourselves. So like, let's say it is like pretty severe schizophrenia, for example, EMDR therapy would not be a good modality for that person, because they may lose focus, for example, on being able to stick with the memory that we're trying to reprocess. So we would need to probably start by addressing things from a more biological perspective there, like what's going on with what's going on with your brain, basically, what neurotransmitters aren't working right. Can we talk about medication, you know, for that, to hopefully get that right. And then once that's stabilized some, then we can move over here and be like, okay, were there environmental things that were factoring into it?
Okay, so that makes sense, because, you know, you're not just, you know, the psychological one-trick pony of only EMDR. What, you know, other services do you offer, and what other kind of expertises do you have to, you know, help people, you know, just outside EMDR?
Well, expertise would be a strong word, but...
well, more than me. That's enough, I guess, for some.
Like I said, that's become a huge part of my practice, and I've really started to appreciate how the emotional brain works and what to do with that. But I think that some of the other things that I have found that I'm good at working with, or that I guess know something about, would be anxiety, depression, relationship issues and concerns, sports and performance, faith development issues. Those are the things that I tend to gravitate toward a little bit. And I use other modalities for that as well. Like I said, I use cognitive behavioral therapy. I use emotion-focused stuff quite a bit. I use motivational interviewing quite a bit for people who are just trying to modify behaviors or make behavioral changes, things like that. Just your standard talk therapy I do quite a bit as well.
Okay. And so where can people learn more about you and your practice?
Sure. HallelujahCounseling.com. Hallelujah is a word that I did not exactly know how to spell whenever I started off. I thought I had this great name since we were wanting to be a clinically focused, biblically based counseling practice. It's like, oh man, that sounds good. And my daughter's name's Hallie too. So it's okay. So yeah, Hallelujah, HallelujahCounseling.com. We're located right here in Maryville, Missouri. Our phone number is 660-223-1700.
I mean, if it makes you feel better, I know people into antiquing that don't know how to spell antiquing sometimes.
Ooh, yeah, that might be a word that would get me out in a spelling bee. Clinical medications, too, by the way. Oh my gosh, like, they're all very unfriendly. Trazodone, like those kinds of things, they're all words that would get me out in a spelling bee.
I feel like the doctor is issuing them sometimes, don't know, because I've noticed just from being on certain antidepressants my whole life that they have little like abbreviations or code words that they'll just sometimes scribble out.
Yeah, no, they don't know how to spell it. That's why they scribble, I think. Somebody's going to call the office and double check what that was, so they didn't have to worry about spelling it. So we may have just uncovered why doctors all have messy handwriting right there. They're just self-conscious about spelling the medications. I would be. I mean, I don't blame them.
All right, well, anything else you'd like to add, or anything I neglected to ask you about you'd like to talk about?
No, thanks for having me. I just really hope that Hallelujah Counseling myself, along with my partner, Courtney Koch. I'm excited about the work that we're going to do in the community, and I help through EMDR and some of our other modalities that we're really able to make an impact. That's all I've wanted to do my whole life. That's what I feel like I'm called to do, and I'm excited that I'm finally getting the opportunity.
All right, well, good luck. Once again, that is Haston Wilson with Hallelujah Counseling. Once again, that is Haston Wilson with Hallelujah Counseling here in Maryville. They just opened last month. I'm Jerry Werner, and this has been your morning conversation right here on KXCV KRW.